Not all meals are created equal. For instance, breakfast has the spicy egg McMuffin for a limited time, and lunch doesn't. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
This is the Friends of History Debating Society, live from Londinium, 91 AD, a summer's evening. Germanicus is here. We're at the wine bar. The Centurions remain telling whopper stories, wonderful stories. We have a couple of stories to tell as well about how the British Empire, inheriting the Roman Empire, maintained authority over a vast globe where communication and transportation was extremely difficult and challenging and required high technology and a lot of patience. We don't have any of that here in the American Empire, and yet we're not doing as effective a job as the British did once upon a time, although there was the crack-up of the American colonies. However, we turn to the American colonies 250 years later. That's right now. We have an analogy that increasingly becomes useful, which is the Oedipal struggle. Elon Musk is the illegitimate son. He is falling into the role of Mark Antony, Caesar's master of the horse. And Octavian, from out of nowhere, is the adopted son, in this case, Senator, now Vice President Vance, a younger man than Mark Antony, but nonetheless vivid and well-spoken and a resume of worthwhile and to be admired. And then, because Caesar's still with us, sort of, in the person of the president, it's not a direct analogy, it's a rough one. We're looking for the Oedipal struggle. First, the two had a bromance, that's Mark Antony and Caesar, or in this case, Musk and Trump. And then they fell out, as predictable as the rain. And Octavian to the fore, making speeches, partisan speeches in which everybody nods along. He's especially effective when he's speaking against what he calls the radical left. In any event, this isn't about Mark Octavian. Octavian will inherit. It's about Mark Antony misbehaving and not understanding his role. Germanicus, I'm sure you have thoughts about this. Right now, Mark Antony, a.k.a. Musk, or Musk, a.k.a. Mark Antony, is being chastised routinely by the people who hold stakes in his private enterprises. That would be SpaceX. That would be X, formerly Twitter. Especially Tesla. The Tesla shareholders, the big ones, are saying, cut it out, Elon. Your business is falling apart. We don't care what your political opinions are. Go back to making money. You used to be good at that. Have you forgotten how? And Elon Musk, a.k.a. Mark Antony, is pretty much behaving as if he's on a bender with Cleopatra, although there's no Cleopatra here. There might be 12 or 13 of them. But in any event, he's a man without guardrails, is the popular saying today. And when it comes to SpaceX, that's a great deal of his attractiveness to Gen X and millennials. But they're having difficulty launching a successful test. And so you add all of this up, and what you get is Musk going through a bad patch on the road, generous way. And we can look forward to him patching it up with Julius Caesar. Well, I don't know. I can't tell. The Oedipal drama plays out in tragic dimensions. I don't see this as tragic. It's more like a farce. How do you measure Musk's behavior these days? Is it predictable and acceptable, or must he really go back to just making money?
I feel that from a historical, long wave perspective, I feel that Musk and his relationship to Trump is most useful in terms of what it tells us about the transformation in American politics from republic to empire. And many of the difficulties that all of the actors have trying to find a relationship that will work or the relationship that will best fit what they want, is that the entire institution or office of this new political order has not been fully established. And that's the best comparison, I think, to the period of Caesar and the very late Roman Republic, is that Rome then was already in the process of this transition in terms of the constitutional order. And it was very difficult, not only for Caesar, but for the powerful men of the optimates and for Caesar's closest associates to know what the relationship would be. And in later times, for example, let's say Henry VIII comes to mind. He was an established king in the late medieval concept of kingship, which was entering into its divine right phase, which would be, of course, its undoing. And he would have favorites too, and they often made bad ends, as they the same favorite, well, different favorites, but as the favorites of Queen Elizabeth would as well. So you have the famous example of Thomas Cromwell, and he was raised up to the highest heights and then quickly fell, because of the machinations of people who hated him, like Anne Boleyn, et cetera, et cetera. But the fact is, it's a very uncertain place to be if you are the advisor to the king in that time. However, things were more amorphous in the period at the end of Caesar's, I don't know what we want to call it, extended dictatorship, which is what they'd granted him immediately before he was assassinated. Well, this is exactly what's happening with Musk, because in an established situation, which you'd have later in the Roman Empire, the emperor would adopt a son, and this would be in the period from Nerva to Marcus Aurelius. The emperor would adopt a son formally and officially, even though he wasn't related to him, and that person would be the next emperor, and it worked smoothly for about a century. We're not at that point, and it's uncertain, really, how to think about these things. It is quite clear to many that the heir apparent is Mr. Vance, but it's not clear what the exact role of Musk would have been or is now, because he's an extremely powerful person, and he's also in many ways emblematic of the most flamboyant, but also the most significant elements of the Trumpian MAGA vision, especially in the realm of entrepreneurship, can do, the stars are there for us, and all of the kind of libertarian possibility that has been unlocked by Mr. Trump's second victory. And so he's therefore symbolic and a kind of powerful duke. I could compare him to the Duke of Burgundy in the 15th century, where Burgundy was this sprawling place that was once known as Lotharingia. And it was the industrial heart of late medieval Europe. It was truly powerful economically, and there had been an industrial revolution, and it was there in what is now Belgium and the Rhineland, etc., and the Netherlands. So he, Musk has some of the same weight and authority in his role, but there is no clear way to bring him in to things, because the nature of authority and the nature of the system that is evolving, the new American emperor system, is still amorphous. It hasn't really gelled yet, and I think part of why you see the Democrats in such disarray is that they had grown used to a kind of collegial oligarchic system, not unlike the Roman Senate. And that has broken down, and they have no way at this point to compete, to even begin to imagine how to compete with this new concept that is taking root, which is the charismatic emperor system, in which the major relationship that counts politically is the relationship between the emperor and the people. And it's uncertain where the elites, the Senate, fits into that. And the Democrats, as a kind of senatorial party, has no response. And so it's a very, what makes Musk so interesting is how he's kind of highlighting what's happening right in front of our eyes.
I measure, though, a detail that I skipped over too quickly. Julius Caesar is dead, and Mark Antony and Octavian are allies for a while, and then they're enemies for a while. But the reason Caesar was dead was the daggers came out. Brutus and his posse defending the public. Suddenly, it occurs to me that's what we've got today.
Yeah. Yes.
The daggers are out. They haven't got it yet. But
they were out a year ago, almost exactly, in a little place in Pennsylvania, right?
The Butler book from Selina Zito. It's amazing to read through those moments and see what Mr. Trump says when Selina's chatting with him at some point. He calls her seven times.
Yep.
And she's chatting with him at some point, and he's got someone else in the room who turns out to be Lindsey Graham. And so they're walking and talking. Well, they're walking together. And he's trying to find out how it is that he turned his head. And he decides, and this is in his voice in Selina's book, The Hand of God, which means that he took on the role of being the Anointed One, which is not like what Caesar achieved right at toward the end. He was leaving to defeat the Parthians because he was exempt from normal.
Well, he had to follow the path of all great Roman emperors, which was to be equal to Alexander. As Alexander had come as close as any human could to equaling Achilles, where the Iliad is the lodestone of all meaning. But here it's interesting. I just want to interject here. George Washington, when he took over command from Braddock after he fell at that battle before Fort Duquesne in the forest, his uniform, his tunic and his greatcoat and all that was pierced by several, up to seven bullets, and he was not touched. He became a kind of anointed one, the same way that you see with Mr. Trump. It's a remarkable correspondence.
Yes, and 2,000 years later, we have the same drama. Now, if we follow the Roman script, Octavian wins. But if we follow the script in between, it's not clear. Yes. The Oedipal script, not. We don't have a winner. And maybe looking for a winner is a false search. We should just permit the forces, because they're not unequal forces. The illegitimate son, the adopted son,
yeah,
and the Senate. And the Senate is watching. It wants its power back, Germanicus.
Oh, it does, but it doesn't know how to do it. Because the Senate, this is hard to say, but I think we need to face up to it. The Senate has become like the kabuki screen or a scrim in stage business, which obscures what's really going on. So the real power is what happens behind the scenes with all the powerful figures in the U.S. And then the Senate is simply a way for these powerful people or senators acting on behalf of powerful people to give it some legitimacy in an assembly. Even that is murky, because senators themselves, some of them are very powerful, but many of them are literally agents for these larger figures, the dukes in America, the true oligarchy. And so I don't know how that, this is what happened to the Senate in Rome. I mean, the Senate in Rome at the height of the Republic, let's say during the Second Punic War, was nothing like the Senate during the Principate, during the early period of the Empire, where there were still many, many powerful men in the Senate who had tremendous influence. But the Senate as a body running the Roman affairs, it wasn't.
Germanicus is Makovleos. I'm Gaius John Batzer. We're going to turn to the decision that the British Empire had to make when it dealt with the rebellion in the colonies. Are we going to win this with soft power? Our terms of the 21st century now, which means diplomacy and negotiation, or we're going to win it with hard power. That's the Redcoats, the 47th Foot, and their allies. And when we come back, it's a balancing act between Sir Henry Clinton, hard power, and Sir William Howe, soft power. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART, or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.